Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The porta potty of Medicare podcasts. Getting his kicks on Route 66, it's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Alrighty, it's another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. As Drew McMillan just told you, I am Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. Drew McMillan is my Canadian nephew, and he's a big-time entertainer, and he's been on a television show called Powerboat TV. If you'd like to see him in action, you can go to powerboattv.com and watch episodes of his show, but I believe the show has ended its production after something like 20 years. Drew wasn't on it all 20 years. He was only on the last couple of years. But anyway, I am here to help people feel better about the onset of Medicare. You can make that transition from Obamacare to Medicare or from regular life to Medicare life much more easily and much less painfully than you might have suspected. Now, one way to describe in a very short, succinct manner what we're doing here is to ask Randy to play the 30-second radio spot we developed last year. And I think within 30 seconds, you'll have a very clear idea of what we're up to here. So I'm going to be quiet so that Randy can play that. And then I'll come back and I'll yak some more.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you, Randy. I appreciate that. By the way, I do want to send a message to all of Randy's friends at the Buffalo Chip Saloon in Cave Creek, Arizona. Last episode we had of this Medicare for the Lazy Man series was about the adventures of two of my favorite clients, Ken and Shelley. But that came straight from the mail bag. It just happens to have been a recent period of correspondence rather than an older, it was not at the bottom of the bag, it was right on top of the bag because it had happened that day. Today is another piece of correspondence straight from the mailbag. So I want you boneheads, you knuckleheads down at the Buffalo Chip to leave Randy alone for at least 2 weeks because we're doing two episodes in a row that have Medicare for the Lazy Man mailbag roots. And I'm pulling them out of that bag and addressing them so that you will have no complaints for, I'm thinking, at least 2 weeks. So, Randy, do you think that message is going to get across to them?
Oh, I certainly hope so, because I'm getting to where last time, I think it was last weekend, maybe the weekend before that, in order to get into the Buffalo Chip to have a beer. I had to dress very differently than I normally do. I had a 10-gallon hat. I haven't worn a 10-gallon hat in forever because I'm not a 10-gallon person, but I did.
Okay, you had me a little worried about what your mode of dress was going to be, so thank you for that. I'm glad you clarified.
I look like a much smaller, skinnier version of Hoss Cartwright.
Well, that's all right. A big hat makes people think you're smarter. Look at the size hat he needs to cover that brain up.
Well, a good friend of mine, you know what he says about somebody like that. Hopefully not me.
All hat, no cattle?
All hat and no cattle.
There you go. Well, what I thought you were going to say, what I was afraid you were going to say, has its roots a couple of years ago. We were traveling around in old Corvettes in Arizona, and I told the group, hey, I've got reservations for us all to eat in Tucson at, I want to say Salerno's, which is a 4th Avenue Italian restaurant that was founded in 1935, and it's still owned and run by descendants of the original founders. And so it's Fourth Avenue is kind of a crowded area. It's not too far from the campus, the University of Arizona. And so I told a friend of mine that I would show him where a good parking spot would be. And so he and I found this place, snuck his car into this parking spot, got out of the car, and here's a guy about 6 feet tall with a big giant dog standing there in a dress, a full-length dress. The guy's got a beard.
Oh, my God. And that's not good.
Earrings, like pirate earrings, and this dog snarling at us, like waiting for us to say something rude. And he said, "Hello, gentlemen." And we said,
"Oh,
hello."
My God.
So I was afraid I was going to hear something like that from you, but thank you for screwing me.
Isn't it? Yeah, we're just heading on out now. We'll talk to you later.
Yeah, if you ever go to Tucson, Fourth Avenue is where you're going to find the freaks and the geeks and the potheads and the hippies and a lot of the transients. We love to call them.
Bums. I didn't realize that Tucson was the let's go out and drag sort of a town.
Well, that one guy thinks it is. I don't know that many other people do. I'll tell you, because it's a college town and an Air Force town, you get a lot of dichotomy. You got your lefties, you got your righties. So you're going to have a little of either there. They've got a giant Air Force base, the world's largest warplane boneyard. So they've got thousands of acres of airplanes in various stages of dismantling. And if they need parts for like a warthog or something like that, they can just go out and pick them off of it's like the world's greatest junkyard for airplanes. So I always like
that.
Well,
I won't tell you the gory details, but Tucson holds a very memorable place in my heart.
Why would that be? Tell me some of the gory details.
Not only did you and my daughter go to U of A, but it was the last place in recent memory that I got in a bar fight. So, I really love Tucson.
Do you know which bar that was?
It was one of the resorts, which shall remain nameless.
I don't know why it should be, Rene. Why would it be remain nameless? I don't think the bar fights are going on there on a daily basis, are they?
I hope not. Honestly, I can't remember the name of it.
Oh, well, there you go. That's a good reason.
I'll have to look it up and drop it on you later.
Well, there was a bar close to the campus called Gentle Ben's. It was in an old...
I think I've been there.
Well, it was in an old fraternity house, so it's got kind of a roomy layout. It's not really too... But it's old. I mean, it was old in the 70s when I went to school there, but I used to go there all the time. If you go upstairs, it's got a big room with a bunch of pool tables in it, like six pool tables maybe. And I used to go up there all the time. And frankly, my friends and I would see the same people there all the time. One of these people we would see every time we went there was this big Pima Indian. Don't ask me how I knew he was a Pima. But he was and he was a big guy and he was quiet. Not a lot of small talk. Loved to shoot pool. Pool stick looked like a toothpick in his hand. That's how big a guy this was.
And so
he and I never really conversed or anything. We never had any reason to. But one day I was sitting against a wall waiting for my turn. And this big old Pima Indian came over to me and slapped me gently on my cheek and said, "I'll meet you outside." And I thought, oh, God, I don't know why it's my day.
What did I do?
Exactly. Well, I didn't want to, start crying right then, but I wanted to try to suss this out. And I'm sitting there thinking. And so my friends are going, what did you do? I don't know. And well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm taking you guys with me. No, you're not.
What did you say to him? Nothing.
So at some point I decided I better get this, dog and pony show on the road. And so, probably an hour and a half later, he hadn't been around. So I got the impression he was outside waiting for me. So I thought, okay, I'm going to finish my beer as I'm walking towards the door and let's see what happens. Maybe I can talk my way out of it. Cause I was tired of having my guts churning around in my stomach. So I, was kind of heading towards in the direction of the front door. And all of a sudden, here he comes, coming the other direction. And he stopped, looked down at me, and he said, "Sorry, I made a mistake. the guy that pointed you out should have been pointing out somebody else. And then he just kept going. And I don't know if I ever saw him again. We never exchanged any other words than that. It was all like, I'm going to kill you. And then later, made a mistake.
Oh, sorry. Wrong guy.
No, not even sorry. He wasn't sorry. I don't think he ever knew.
I got the other right guy. I just finished up with the other guy. So, yeah, sorry, wrong guy.
He might have. He could have taken the guy's neck in his one hand and squashed him like a bug. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
so
I hear you.
That's my fondest memory.
Speaking of Medicare.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. I took a trip to Iowa recently. I had to go out there to see a gentleman. And this gentleman is a retired shop teacher from some school somewhere, lives out in the boondocks in Eldon, Iowa. And the skill he has that I needed was that he is a master Japanese motorcycle expert. And this guy rebuilt a motor. I bought a used eBay Honda 305, a 1965 Honda Super Hawk 305. And the motor, among other things on the bike, was pretty much shot. So I needed some professional help. And I drove out there with the box of pieces of the motor. And this guy was kind as all heck to say, look, I'll put it together. I mean, I'll rebuild it so it'll be just like new. But I got to work at my own schedule. You know, I'm retired. I have a lot of fun things to do. And I still race motorcycles. So I said, that's fine. You take your time. Well, a year later, here I am. Yesterday, driving out to Iowa to pick up the motor. Boy, I got there. A couple of things had changed. First of all, that motor was all put together. He showed me how it has great compression now. He hooked up the starter. It thing cranks like it's ready to go. All it needs is some gasoline. And the other thing that was different was that he has a girlfriend now. I mean, this guy's in his 70s, and his girlfriend was also in her 70s. And I don't know how he met her, because her year-round home is in California, and she is a retired psychotherapist, a PhD psychotherapist, not an MD who can write prescriptions, but she is kind of like a Bob Newhart. And so she's retired now, and she's widowed. So I didn't realize this, but sometime in the past year, the guy who was rebuilding my motorcycle engine told her that I'm a Medicare expert. And so she's been waiting to talk to me. I didn't know this. She's been staying with this guy in Iowa, and she had a million questions. I could not get any motorcycle talk in, but this woman was saying, all right, here's what I've got. What should I be doing? Because nobody has helped me out. My husband died 13 years ago. And I don't know if I made the right decisions or not. So I need somebody. She said, how many copies of your book did you bring with you? And I said, well, you know, that's kind of like egomaniacal to carry books around with me wherever I go. So I didn't bring any books. She said, send me your book now to this address. And then the guy also said, yeah, and I want mine autographed. Send two books, autograph mine. And I turned back to her. I said, would you like yours autographed? Because the guy yelled at me not long ago for autographing a book. He didn't want me to autograph it. And that's when I learned that my autograph isn't as valuable as I originally had thought it would be on the book. So anyway, she's asking me a million questions. And she said, what I have now, I think, is a Medicare supplement, and it's costing me an arm and a leg. And she's 78 years old, lives in California. And I said, how much is it costing you? And she said, I can't remember, because it comes out of my checking account. It's either $225, maybe $250. And I said, well, I can do a lot better than that for you if you want to take on a little bit of the additional risk. So what I'm talking about here, we've talked about a million times, and I'll never stop talking about it, is the fact that you get a lot more bang for your bucks when you get a high deductible Medicare supplement than you do a regular, you know, like a Plan G. People looking at Medicare right now have a choice between the Cadillac of all Medicare supplement plans, which is a Plan G, that's a little pricey, or the high performance GTO, which is a high deductible or high value plan. And that would be a high deductible plan, HDG. So this woman is older, so she actually qualified for a plan F. She has the Lincoln Continental. I don't know. She's got the richest plan ever invented. It pays everything. But the price is going up very quickly. And I said, well, you can afford to keep paying that $225, $250, something like that per month. Or you can switch to what I would suggest, which is a much less expensive plan that exposes you to a little bit of the risk, a limited amount of that 20% of Part B outpatient expenses that you otherwise, the plan would pay that for you. But if you are willing to accept a $2,300 risk, then you can lower your expenditure considerably. And she said, $2,300, $2,370. She said, that sounds like a lot of money. That's kind of a scary thing to tell somebody that their deductible is $2,370. And I said to her, well, it's not really $2,370 at all. Let's subtract the savings, your premium savings that you would have every year from that amount at risk. In other words, the $2,370 is what you'd have to pay if you had a bad series of medical expenses. However, how about the money that you're putting in your pocket or under your mattress or in your underwear drawer every month when you don't have medical expenses? And she said, well, you know, how does that work? And so I said, well, I've got a form I'm going to send you. It's like a worksheet. And basically, I want to know what your Medicare cost right now is for your Plan F supplement. And she said, it's like $225 or $250. I don't know which. So I said, okay, well, when I get back to my office, I'm going to deal with my friend Ken, first of all. And when I finish with Ken, I'm going to be looking at a plan for you. And I want to know how much you're going to be able to save taking the high deductible Plan F from my favorite company, my favorite Medicare supplement company, which has extraordinary rate stability. The rates, they never raise the rates unless it comes down to, you know, kill or be killed. And they have just developed an extraordinary amount of rate stability plus really effective customer service. They don't farm their telephone people out to foreign countries. When you call this company in Texas, you're going to hear a Texas accent. And they're going to know what the answer is, or they're going to find out while you're on the phone. And in fact, they answer the phone. You're not going to have to listen to a bunch of recordings telling you to press one for Spanish and press two for this and that. So I love this company. Anyway, I got home and I got the rate sheet out for this company that I really love. And I said, what would the cost for a high deductible Plan F, a high value Plan F, be for a 78-year-old female in that part of California that she calls home? And I found out that the monthly cost would be $55 at her age. Now, she's paying $225 to $250 a month right now for the regular Plan F, the Cadillac Plan F. And so I sharpened my pencil and I licked the end of my pencil and I did some ciphering. And what I did was I said, first of all, let's find out how much she's saving. Now, since I don't know whether it was $250 or $225, I took the most conservative route. And I said, let's assume that her monthly premium right now is $225. And let's then say that she wants to think about switching to a high deductible Plan F. And that switch would bring her premium from $225 down to $55 per month. So that right there is a savings of $170 per month. That's money that she can actually just take and put in under her mattress, in her underwear drawer, or put it in her purse and go out and have a good time with it. But this is money that she doesn't have to spend on her Medicare supplement. Now, I got to tell you, this was a slim, trim, petite woman who looked like she was in excellent health. She told me she had had a stroke, like 30 years before, but there was no after effect, no lingering effect. And I said, all right, well, here's the deal. The $225 minus the $55 that your new premium would cost would save you about $170 a month. And this is what I'm going to tell her, not what I did tell her, what I was telling myself. Now, 170 times 12, this is for the year, her savings for the year, $2,040. Now, that's how much she can put away. What makes this work? Because she is not a 65-year-old spring chicken. She's been around for a while, and her premium on the high the Cadillac plan is so much higher because it's been increased on a regular basis. The premium on the high deductible or high value plan still is small because when you get a 5% premium increase on that plan, it's that many fewer dollars. So she is saving $2,040 every year. Now let's subtract that $2,040 from the worst case scenario, which is having to meet her deductible of $2,370. The answer is that she will be risking $330 a year in a worst case scenario. In other words, she might have to pay, if she has a really bad year, she might have to pay the $2,370 deductible that the high deductible plan demands. However, she will have saved during that year $2,040 in premium outlay, meaning she's only risking $330. And this picture only gets better as time goes by, because the cost of the plan F, the Cadillac plan, goes up much faster. So the older you are, the more you're going to benefit from, and you probably there's a break-even point a couple of years down the road. With this company, she's got to pay $55 for a high deductible plan at age 78. At age 79, it would go to $58, and at age 80, $62, and it never goes up after that. She could live to be 120, and she would be paying $62 plus any extra for medical inflation. But this company stops giving out age-related increases at age 80. So this particular woman would be looking at a very level premium from age 80 on. And at age 78 right now, $55 looks pretty good compared to the high premium she's paying. So now her next question to me is going to be, how can I avail myself of those savings? So I'm going to say, well, I've got a health questionnaire here. This company will accept you if you can answer no to all of these questions. And she's going to say, well, what are the questions? And I'm going to say, well, here's the form, but the questions are, there are 13 questions. What is your height and weight? Now, I don't know where the cutoffs are. I probably have a height and weight chart somewhere, but that's question one. Question two, are you currently hospitalized or in a nursing facility or, you know, receiving Medicare approved home health care more than two or more times in the past 12 months? So that's fairly benign. Three, do you have emphysema, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or pulmonary fibrosis? Number four, are you bedridden or do you use a wheelchair for any daily activities? Or have you been diagnosed with Gaucher's disease or any other type of lysosomal storage disorder? I don't even know what that is. Or have you had any type of amputation caused by disease? Number five, have you been advised that surgery may be required within the next 12 months for cataracts? Number six, have you been diagnosed or treated for Parkinson's, multiple or lateral sclerosis, Alzheimer's, senile dementia, or organic brain disorder? Number seven, have you been diagnosed or treated by a member of the medical profession for AIDS or ARC? Number eight, do you have diabetes requiring more than 50 units of insulin a day? Number nine, within the past 2 years, have you been diagnosed or treated for internal cancer, melanoma, leukemia, alcoholism or drug abuse, cirrhosis, mental or nervous disorder requiring psychiatric care, or have you been advised to have kidney dialysis? Number 10, within the past 2 years, have you been diagnosed or treated for heart attack, peripheral vascular disease, congestive heart failure, heart valve disorder, stroke, or transient ischemic attacks? Number 11, within the past 2 years, Have you been diagnosed or treated for rheumatoid arthritis or crippling arthritis? Number 12, within the past year, have you been fed intravenously through a tube or have you been medically advised to have surgery for joint replacement or for a heart condition, but not had such surgery? Or have you been advised to have other surgery that was not performed? And the final question is, have you used tobacco or nicotine in any form in the past 12 months? So if you can answer no to all of those questions, you too can avail yourself of the incredible premium savings of the high deductible Medicare supplement plan. And that means that you can party with the extra money that you're stuffing away in your sock drawer or under your mattress. And, you know, if you invite me to the party, so much the better. But I just wanted to let people know that there is a way to reduce your outlay without jeopardizing your level of financial protection too much. So there you go, Randy. Numbers, numbers, numbers. Always exciting insurance talk.
You got it.
How are we doing? How are we doing time-wise?
We're done.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I thought maybe we had another 10 minutes.
No, but I do have a bit of exciting news for you.
I can't wait to hear it.
You'll be glad to know, you may not have known, but Steven Seagal put his Scottsdale compound up for sale.
I did know about that, and it's $13 million or something. I can't remember what it was.
No, it's a little bit less than that. He listed it for $3.4 million.
Oh, is that all?
And he sold it for $3.5 million. So you'll be glad to know that Steve got his compound sold while you were moving to Illinois for the summer.
Well, I know that the par for the course right now in the Arizona real estate market is bidding wars. So you're saying he got $100,000 more than he...
Yeah, he got $100,000 more than he asked for. So I know you're over there to see Steven quite a bit, but
he and I are
you
buddies.
Do you remember how big the house is?
I was at that place that made huge news a couple of years ago because it was so big, but nobody knew who the owner was or who the builder was.
Yeah, it could be. Could be. Well, it's just for those of you in the audience that you're going to be sorry you missed out on this deal out here in Scottsdale. It's in Desert Mountain, which is it's called Carefree Ranch Homesteads in Desert Mountain. And it's 8,973 square feet. But its big claim to fame is that all of the floor to ceiling glass is bulletproof.
Yeah, I think I remembered that. I got to tell you, my house here is 7,500 square feet. So this place I'm thinking of is not the one that Steven Seagal had built because it's got to be 50,000 square feet. It's got casitas and all kinds of stuff. But it does look kind of mid-century modern floor-to-ceiling glass, so that's why I was confused. But yeah, I did hear that.
Now, I don't know if this is actually the truth, but I've always heard since I moved out here to Arizona that the largest privately owned home in the state is that one that's up on the hill as you go down 48th Street into Phoenix. It's like, I don't know, 10,000, 12,000, I don't know how many square feet. And I used to know who owned it, but it's like a freaking hotel.
Well, I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, I was in second, third grade. I was out here with my grandparents and they went to a party at a house that was built by a guy who was a very big minority stockholder in Standard Oil of Indiana. I don't know who the guy was. If I ever heard his name, it wasn't memorable at the time, and it wasn't Rockefeller, but it was somebody who was in big time with the, had a bunch of their stock. And this house, my grandmother told me, had a 90 car garage underneath it, blasted out of the rock. Plus bowling alleys, not one bowling alley, but a bunch of bowling alleys and God knows what else. But she said it was quite the sumptuous place. I don't know if that's the one you were talking about on 48th Street or not.
This one that I'm speaking of, I think was probably a little bit newer than that, when the one you're talking about, because this one, it doesn't look like it's been around all that long. But yeah. I heard at one point in time that the utility bills on it were like $8,000 a month. So I don't know, that's a lot of money. But
ours were pretty big too. We had four electric resistance furnaces, plus four air conditioning compressors, plus electric resistance wires in all the ceiling. So let's say you had a bunch of house guests and one of them was chilly and the other ones were comfortable. You'd set a thermostat, but then you could set a different thermostat in each room and have each room be a different temperature because of the electric resistance ceiling heat. And I got rid of all that crap. I put gas furnaces in, and the ceiling heat in the bathrooms, I switched to have that circuitry now feed floor heat, you know, so it's got those pads under the floor. Frankly, we just don't use the other rooms, the hallways, the closets. Every one of those rooms and areas has its own thermostat, and I just I don't encourage their use because it's just too expensive.
Now, I have heard, is this true, Doug, that you've actually started chopping your own wood?
Well, I would have had to do that, but when I have gas heat, it's a much much more cost effective way of heating a house right
now. Yeah. Well, I am going to say we probably ought to land the plane, but before I do, I need to thank everyone for joining us today. We certainly appreciate it. But normally we say land the plane, but for today and today only, we were taking a trip on the Medicare for the Lazy Man bus. So we all need to come in, because very soon, if you're ready for lunch, we're going to stop off. We've got a bunch of box lunches we bought for you off at this cafe, and we're going to have to get you started on your box lunch and your beer.
Is this Namath's prison bus that he takes people around?
I think it's Joe Namath. Joe Namath was driving it. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, God. We better get the heck out of here before something bad happens.
Oh, I know. So thanks for joining us.
Go to Amazon and buy a book, Medicare for the Lazy Men, and we will meet you on the other side, I hope.
Yes. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the insurance guy, and now, in addition to many, many other things, he is the CIO or CEO, whichever he wants to be, of the Medicare for the Lazy Man bus lines.
Bye-bye.